Good morning. It's good to see you here today, and I'm glad you survived the rain. And, you know, we need to pray for the farmers because while we're having somewhat of an inconvenience because of the weather, if you're a farmer, you're losing a good part of your livelihood because they can't plant their crops. That may affect us in the next year or so because we wind up eating the crops they make, so prices may go up. So we do need to pray for them and think about them as well. We'll miss the Knowltons as they move on. We mentioned that in Bible class. Look forward to them having a happy, successful life in Alabama. Van said they're in a drought down there, so if you want to take a bucket of water down there with them and help them distribute it, that might be appreciated. Also, Scott reminded me to let everybody know that there's sign-up sheets in the foyer on the bulletin board for the adult classes. A week from Wednesday night, we start a new classes, and one class will be studying the book of James. Tim Young's going to be teaching that. And Clyde Alderman's going to be teaching the study of Bible authority, and they have workbooks for that as well. So sign up for that, because if you don't sign up quickly, you don't know how many books to buy or to make. And if you wait too long, we'll have you teaching the book of Revelation or something. So be careful. Just kidding. Building spiritual walls, a very good application based on Nehemiah chapter 4, really the first six chapters. We see Nehemiah, who is nothing more than a cupbearer to the king, which you and I might think is a menial task, but Nehemiah is quite a resourceful, talented, leadership-driven human being. So what I want to do in this lesson, obviously, is show you the qualities of leadership that Nehemiah possessed, encourage our younger people to start developing, if you haven't already, these qualities of leadership, because the Lord's church will always need leaders. I'm aware of the fact that our leaders are getting older. I'm getting older. In a few short years, I'm not going to be in this pulpit anymore. The elders we have, some will not be here anymore. And so who's going to step up? Who's going to take the lead? Who's going to be the one to make sure the Lord has spiritual walls here in the future? So that's what we're encouraging you to think about. Plus, it's a reminder to those of us who are trying to encourage this congregation to do our part still yet. If you're not familiar with Nehemiah, we want to give you a simple background. Nehemiah went to rebuild the city walls of Jerusalem about 444 B.C. The enemies were opposed to it, and the wall was built in spite of all the enemies' efforts in 52 days. And portions of that wall still remain to this day, which is quite amazing. If you look in Nehemiah chapter 3 and verse 26, Nehemiah mentions stairs. And those stairs are still here thousands of years later. He mentions in verse 25 the bend in the wall, and that still remains. And in verse 26, he references a tower, which is also still around. So that's quite interesting that the walls that Jeremiah helped to rebuild are still there. And it also helps us realize that archaeology confirms what the Old Testament and what the Bible teaches. So what we want to do is think about the principles that led to the growth of the Lord's church and hopefully gain something out of that. The first point I'd like to make is that Nehemiah was a powerful leader. And the church needs leaders today. And so ask yourself, am I a leader or do I have the potential to be a leader? And that's the first question we want to observe. And if you'll open your Bibles with me to chapter 2, I want to kind of give you a little background of Nehemiah and show you what I mean by his leadership qualities. If you start at chapter 1, and I wish we had time to read the entire first six chapters, but in chapter 1, Nehemiah is a cupbearer. He's working for the king. He's living in a palace. I would say he has a pretty cushy job, as we would say today, right? And yet he's runs into a traveler who's been at Jerusalem recently, and just off the cuff like we tend to do, he said, well, now how's everything going back home? How's the city of Jerusalem? How are all those people who have been carried away in captivity and now brought back to their homeland? How's everything going? And I'm sure Nehemiah thought he was going to hear them say, well, you know, we're rebuilding the country and the city and the capital. It's going to take some time, but we're all doing pretty good. But that's not what he hears. Look at chapter 1 and about verse 3. They said to me, "The survivors who are left from captivity in the province are there in great distress and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down, and its gates are burned with fire." In other words, they painted a real dark, bleak picture. And Nehemiah didn't say, "Well, that's terrible, and I'm sure glad I don't live there." Notice his reaction. Verse 4, "So it was when I heard these words that I sat down and wept and mourned for many days. I was fasting and praying before the God of heaven." First quality of leadership, and you can't do without it, is you have to have some convictions. Nehemiah thought Jerusalem was the city of the nation of Israel, that Israel was God's chosen nation, which it was, and that that nation should do well and prosper, and if it didn't, then that affected his spiritual worship and his life and his well-being. And even though he wasn't personally in that city and suffering like his kinsmen were, it bothered him that that was the case. So to be a leader spiritually, you have to say, "I care about the well-being of God's people and God's churches." And so ask yourself, do you care? It's an honest question. Because think of all the other Jews who lived in this region who didn't seem to care like Nehemiah did. And so Nehemiah's praying and fasting, and his face looks horrible. And as that story goes on in chapter 2, it says, "In the next month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was before him, that I took the wine and gave it to the king." And then he says, "Now I was sad in his presence." And I'd never been sad in his presence before. And the king said, "Why is your face sad since you're not sick? This is nothing but sorrow of heart." And notice the next statement. He says, "So I became dreadfully afraid." Here is the king's cupbearer, and boy, you better walk on solid footing, because you do one wrong thing and that king can have your head cut off and get him another cupbearer. He doesn't know how Artaxerxes is going to react to his sadness. It's his problem, not the king's. But the king notices how terrible Nehemiah looks. He said, "What's wrong with you?" And so with great fear and dread, he says, "May the king live forever. But why should my face not be sad when the city, the place of my father's tomb, lies waste and its gates are burned with fire?" I guess if we could relate to that somehow, and I don't think it's a proper analogy, but imagine the United States of America being overthrown, and we're trying to rebuild our country, but somebody says, "Well, how's Washington, D.C.?" "Well, the Capitol's destroyed. All the monuments are gone. They're toppled over, they're destroyed, they're blown to bits, and nobody seems to be doing anything about it." Would you be happy or sad? I hope you have enough patriotism to say, "Well, that's a sad bit of news for me." And that gives you a little bit of an idea how Nehemiah felt, except his religion and his nation were tied hand in hand. And that made it even more important for him. So you see, he not only cared, he wanted to do something about it. And in the very next statement, the king says, "Well, what do you want? What do you request?" So he said, "I prayed to the God of heaven." And that's leadership number two. You don't do your will. You try to figure out what God wants you to do. So he's praying for wisdom. "God, I need to do something to help. I don't know what it is. I'm a cupbearer back here, hundreds if not thousand miles away. And I need to do something because I can't stand this." So he prays to God, and then he said to the king, "If it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor in your sight, I ask that you send me to Judah, to the city of my father's tombs, that I may rebuild it." And boy, there's the quality. He didn't say, "Let George do it," as soon as he found out his name wasn't George. He didn't say, "Well, I'd like to, but I'm not a builder." He didn't say, "Well, I'd like to, but, you know, what? I'm not a leader, I'm just nobody." He didn't say any of those things. He prayed to God and said, "God, give me strength to know what I should do." And then he asked the king, "I want to go back and I want to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem." Are you crazy? Do you know how large the walls of Jerusalem are? How long do you think that's going to take? And the king asked him that. Well, how long do you think you'll be gone? And he gives him an answer. It doesn't tell us in the text what that answer was. But the king gives him permission and says, okay. And then Nehemiah said, well, now as I'm traveling from here back to Judah, I need letters from you telling all of these governors to let me pass through safely. And I also need another letter saying that we can take the wood of the forest and cut that wood down and make these gates again and all the different structures we need to make to rebuild this wall. And the king said, you've got it. So he's planning ahead. He's looking ahead about what it's going to take to accomplish his mission. And then he goes with his entourage, including several soldiers, makes it all the way back to Jerusalem in the middle of the night, not telling anybody what he's doing, with a very small company of men. He goes around the city and he starts taking notes. Well, this needs to be fixed. That needs to be fixed. This needs to be fixed. We've got that as a problem. So he takes all of his notes, goes all around the city, and now he's prepared. That's what a leader does. He prepares. He plans. He trusts in God. He prays for help and wisdom, and then he proceeds to follow. And that's what we're saying. The church needs leaders today. And we don't need people saying, well, I'm just no leader. Nehemiah was no leader if you look at it from a human standpoint. He's a cupbearer. But in 2 Timothy 2 and verse 2, Paul told young Timothy, Timothy, the things you've heard of me among many witnesses, the same you commit to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. There's how you grow. Timothy, what I've taught you, you go teach somebody else. And the church grows. In 1 Timothy 4:12, Paul said again, yes, you're a young preacher, but let them discourage you. Let no man despise your what? Youth. You know, that's been going on forever. It's been going on forever. Young people tend to get despised by older folks. You know why that is? Because older folks do that thing. I've been young and I'm old. I understand both ends of it. I remember clearly when I was a young preacher in my 20s that I would sit there and think, I wish I were older so people would respect me more. But then I thought, I don't want to get old too fast. But I did anyway. And now I'm thinking, I wish the young people would respect me because all they see is an old geezer. So I've been on both ends of that stick. And Paul says, let no man despise your youth. Well, how do you do that? Not by complaining about it, but by the way you conduct your life. If you want to be respected, then you have to act respectfully. If you want to be respected, you have to act responsibly. So he said, let no man despise your youth, but be an example to the believers in word, in conduct, in spirit, in faith, in purity. You do everything like you're supposed to, and they'll respect you. And that's absolutely true. Whether you're young, middle-aged, or old. Because that's a Christian example. And young people don't look around and say, well, as soon as half a dozen other of my friends start acting that way, I'm going to do it. Did Nehemiah do that? No. As far as we know, there wasn't anybody else anywhere else that cared a bit like Nehemiah did. And he didn't say, well, Lord, when some more young people get going, I will too. He prayed to God. He wept and mourned. He was so convicted that he needed to do something about those walls that he put his effort into it and did everything he could to promote the cause that he knew was right. Question number two then for all of us is, are you doing something to help the Lord's church here? If so, what is it? If not, when are you going to? Oh, I'm too old. I'm too young. I don't know how. I know how too much. I haven't been doing it long enough. I've been doing it too long. I'm too busy. I'm too tired. You know, we can make excuses, but Nehemiah had every one of those excuses to make. It's too far to go back to Jerusalem. I might get killed on the way back. I know there's enemies who are going to make fun of what we're trying to do. And what if I go back and all the people say, if you want to build a wall, have at it. I'm not going to help. Well, it's kind of scary, isn't it? But Nehemiah is just doing his job one thing at a time, and he's being a great example. Christ is our perfect example, 1 Peter 2:21. For to this you were called, because Christ also, what? Suffered for us, leaving us an example that we should walk in his steps. Are you suffering for Christ? It doesn't mean you go out there and beat your head against a brick wall. What it does mean is you stand for what the Bible teaches. You stand for what Jesus believes in, what He died for, His last will and testament. You believe in that and you live for that, and then you'll suffer. But you'll be an example, a light, and a salt to the earth, and that's what America needs right now. As we said, our VBS is coming up on Love Your Neighbors Yourself. Can you think of a theme that's more important to America now? What if before now and the next election, everybody decided, forget politics, let's just love each other like we love ourselves? I think America would do very well. But still, what I'm hearing is everybody's gearing up for another massive battle in a couple of years because we're going to get rid of that stinking president of ours. We're going to do something else. Really? What are we going to get? You know, I remember a president by the name of Donald Trump who said, we need to do what? We need to build a wall. Why did Nehemiah think they needed to build a wall around Jerusalem? For the same reason President Trump did. And everybody hates him for it. But I don't think he's the problem. I think we're the problem. Nehemiah didn't have anybody saying, we don't need a wall in Jerusalem, let's let everybody in. They already did. It wasn't working. The nation was falling apart. It wasn't growing and prospering. And that's what Nehemiah understood. The only way Jerusalem is going to become the capital of this nation again is if we build walls. You keep the undesirables out, you keep those who belong there in. And I'll show you that in a moment. So our elders are the ones that are over us. And keep in mind, as leaders, they're our spiritual leaders. We go as they lead. If they lead well, we go well. If they lead poorly, we're going to do poorly. It's always been that way. It always will be. Hebrews 13:17 says, obey those who have the rule over you and submit yourselves, for they watch out for your souls as those who must give an account. 1 Peter 5:3 says, be examples to the flock, not as lords over them. And that's another quality you see about Nehemiah. He didn't get in there and say, okay, you guys build the wall. He was right in the middle of it. He had a hammer and he was leading and he was giving directions, but he was right in the middle of it. He got his hands dirty too. And so Acts 20:28 says, elders, take heed to yourselves, but also take heed to all the flock. And that's leadership, and we see Nehemiah doing exactly that. But you know, we're all supposed to be examples to the world. And so if we're not being the kind of Christians we should be, then that's where we need to start. Because Ephesians 5:8 tells us that we're to be an influence to those that we're around. And so if we want to build the spiritual walls here, the best way you can help build spiritual walls is where you live, where you work, where you go to school, you let everybody know you're a Christian and try to convert them too. Just let them know what you believe and who you are and what you stand for. If you're ashamed of being a Christian, we're not going to grow. Ephesians 5:8 says, you were once darkness, but now you're light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. Verse 16, he said, redeem the time because the days are evil. So when's the best time to start building spiritual walls? Right now. Do you think Nehemiah said, just as soon as a good opportunity shows itself, I'm going to do it? Nehemiah could not have found worse circumstances and a more depressing situation and a bigger challenge in his whole life than to say, we've got to do something about these walls. But it goes back to point number one. He was so convicted, he didn't look at the obstacles. He said, I've got to get this thing done, and with God's help, we're going to do it. Okay, let's look at number two then. As we read in Nehemiah chapter 2, he goes and surveys all that needs to be surveyed that night. And he said, I'm not telling anybody what's going on, okay? Now look at verse 17. He finally gathers the Jews and the priests and the nobles and the officials together. And he said, I said to them, you see the distress that we are in and how Jerusalem lies waste and its gates are burned with fire. Come and let us build the wall of Jerusalem that we may no longer be a reproach. And I told them of the hand of my God which had been good upon me and also the king's words that he had spoken to me. So Nehemiah comes and gathers all the leaders together and says, hey, we're going to build this wall and I've done thus and so already. And luckily, point number two is that we need individual cooperation, because he says right here, the people answered, let us rise up and build. And verse 6 of chapter 4, it says, the people had a mind to work. Now, if Nehemiah had gone down there and nobody wanted to help, I'm not sure what would have happened. But it's not enough for elders to say, well, we're going to have a VBS, or we're going to have a gospel meeting, or we're going to have a special series of lessons, and everybody says, well, go right ahead. I hope it goes well, but I'm not going to be there. How's that going to help? Well, I'm not important. Yes, you are. Everybody is. Ephesians 4:16, from whom the whole body fitly joined together by that which every joint supplies. So, here's the point. Nehemiah had a plan. And if you don't fail to plan, then you plan to what? Fail. So here's the leader, and he's just one fella. I just wonder if somebody in that crowd didn't say, Nehemiah, who do you think you are? You've been up there in that fancy palace for a long time, and you don't know what we've been through, and you're not suffering like we have, and here you come down from that big high city, and you want to tell us what to do? They didn't say that. Maybe Nehemiah was the character that said, I've got all the plans laid out, I just need somebody to help. And again, none of these people, for the most part, are really builders. But living in this city, they knew, we've got to get these walls built. And keep in mind, they got the entire walls of the city of Jerusalem, which was several miles, done in 52 days, with no encouragement from the opposition. But they did it because they wanted to, and they put their minds to it. Now today, what does America need more than anything? I think it needs spiritual influence. It needs people who are convicted, who say, we want to make America great again. We're going to do it one person at a time, one family at a time, one congregation at a time, and we can make a difference. And I really think America has the hope of doing that in the future. But it's going to be a battle, because we've got a lot of enemies trying to defeat us. So you got to decide, am I going to build? Am I going to just let somebody else build? Fellowship is every bit as important as leadership. And each one of us choose, am I going to help or not? Got a VBS coming up in a couple of weeks. Are you going to help or are you going to not help? You already know the answer, don't you? Well, I'm going to do something to help. I hope you do something to help. If we do, we'll have a great VBS, whether we have 50 or 250. But if we've already decided not to help, then we're planning to fail. And that's not good. And how do we get to that state and that shape anyway? Well, look at Nehemiah chapter 4, verses 16 through 18. There it says, so it was from that time on that half of my servants worked at construction, while the other half held the spears, the shields, the bows, and wore armor. And the leaders were behind all the house of Judah. Those who built on the wall and those who carried burdens loaded themselves, so that with one hand they worked at construction, and with the other they held a weapon. Every one of the builders had his sword girded at his side as he built, and the one who sounded the trumpet was beside me. Now what you don't know reading those three verses is that the enemies have said, we're going to come in there and sneak in at night, and we're going to kill all these people who are building the wall, and they won't even know where we came from. And Nehemiah heard that, so he said, okay, we're going to divide the workforce up in half. Half of you are going to be holding swords and shields and armor. The other half is going to be building the wall. He didn't say, oh no, let's run for our lives. We can't do it. This guy is a leader, and he just says, well, here's the problem. Let's solve the problem. But I want you to notice who decided to help build the wall. You know, chapter 2 and verse 17, it says, let's rise and build the wall. Chapter 3 gives you a list of who all helped. And I'm not going to read the whole chapter, because we'd all get tired of listening to foreign names we can't pronounce. But to show you a sampling of who was involved is quite impressive. Verse 1, Eliashib the high priest and his children helped build the sheep gate. So here's a priest who says, well, I can't get my hands dirty, I'm a priest. No, he helped too. In verse 2 it says, the men of Jericho helped build their wall. Verse 3, the sons of Hasanea built the fish gate, wherever that was. Verse 6, Jehoiada repaired the old gate. Verse 8, Uzziel, the son of Harhiah, one of the goldsmiths, made repairs. He didn't say, well, I'm a goldsmith, so you guys bring the gold and I'll work on that, but the rest of it you're on your own. No, they all pitched in. And what's funny is it says, next to him, Hananiah, one of the perfumers, made repairs. So you get the picture? Everybody's pitching in to build this wall. Verse 9, Rephaiah, the son of Hur, leader of half the district of Jerusalem, made repairs. So here's the guy who's the, I don't know if you call him a town governor or a mayor, but he's in there building too. But maybe the one that impresses me the most is verse 11, or verse 12. It says, next to him was Shallum, the son of Halohesh, leader of half the district of Jerusalem. He and his daughters made repairs. Man, that must have been some daughters. I want to meet some women like that who can help build a wall. Aren't you impressed? Somebody says, well, I don't know anybody like that. I do. There's a young family in Arkansas where my brother preaches, and those girls can milk cows, and they can collect chickens, and they can build fences, and they can harvest stuff in the garden. And those kids can work, and they're not dummies either. They're very smart, very talented, very intelligent, but they're just the kind of people that their mom and dads have taught them, if there's a job that needs to be done, we're going to do it, and boy, there's no excuses made. Went there for a meeting a few years ago, and Emily and I went to their house to eat, and those girls were working so hard getting everything together and making sure that everything was just right, and their mom had taught them very well, and I'm just sitting there going like, I've never seen young people like this. And I'm thinking, well, this must be the kind of people these girls were. His father must not have any sons, so he said, all right, girls, we got to build the wall out here. You going to help? Yeah, Daddy, we'll help. So you see, you know why they built the wall in 52 days? Because the people had a mind to work. They had a goal in mind. They didn't know how long it was going to take, but they built their section. The guy next to him built theirs, next built theirs. And everybody, I mean everybody, was involved. That's what you see in chapter 3. So go read the rest of that chapter and you'll see what I'm talking about. So we all have to pitch in. Well, we see that in the church as well. In chapter 4, when they were being threatened with war, they just, half of them fought, half of them built. Well, in Acts 6, the church was doing great, but then all of a sudden the Grecian widows were being neglected in the ministry of the church and helping these widows out, and they started complaining. And the apostles said, well, we need a plan here. And the plan is that as apostles, it's not proper for us to neglect the spiritual teaching that the church is getting from us. So I want you as a congregation to pick out from among you men who are qualified, full of the Holy Spirit, full of good works that we can trust, and we'll put them in charge of taking care of these widows. And that's what they did, and the church went on. We call those people deacons today. So again, a deacon should be doing the work the church needs. And it's not something you do once in a while. It's something you do all the time. So the question is, do we want to work? Do we want to build the church up here? We have tons of talented people in this congregation. I can start naming names, and many of you have excelled at work. You've been promoted in jobs. You're doing very well, and you're very talented, have lots of ability. So what we need to do is just channel that talent and put it back in the work of the church and make this church grow again. But it's up to you. It's not something the elders can do. But it goes back to faith being a great motivator. Nehemiah didn't say we can't. Nehemiah said, here's how we're going to do it. And keep in mind that he believed that God would help. I think that's probably what helped more than anything. In chapter 2 and verse 20, he said, I answered them in saying, the God of heaven himself will prosper us. Therefore, we, his servants, will arise and build. But you, and he's talking to the enemies, he said, you have no heritage or right or memorial in Jerusalem. A nice way of saying that is, you guys, the enemies, stay out. We'll build the wall because God's going to help us. That's conviction. Chapter 4 and verse 14. He tells them, do not be afraid of the enemies. Remember the Lord, great and awesome, and fight for your brethren, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your houses. they don't know if they're going to be killed trying to rebuild the wall, because if you back up in verse 7, listen to what was going on. It happened when Sanballat, Tobiah, the Arabs, the Ammonites, and the Ashdodites heard that the walls of Jerusalem were being restored and the gaps were beginning to be closed, that they became very angry, and they all conspired together to come and attack Jerusalem and create confusion. Nevertheless, we made our prayer to God, and because of them we set a watch against them day and night. And so they all decided, all right, we're going to fight. Every single man, even those who built, were carrying their sword in their side. And so finally, with that attitude and that disposition, it says in verse 21 of chapter 4, we labored in the work, and half of the men held the spears from the daybreak until the stars appeared. At the same time, I also said to the people, let each man and his servant stay at night in Jerusalem, that they may be our guard by night and a working party by day. So neither I, my brethren, my servants, nor the men of the guard who followed me took off our clothes, except that everyone took them off for washing. This is called suffering for the cause of God. But what's really interesting is when the enemies heard that they were aware of their plan, they got discouraged and gave up. Pretty cool, don't you think? And so in the New Testament, we see Paul had faith. That's what made him a great apostle. 2 Timothy 1:12, I know whom I have believed and persuaded is able to keep that which I have committed unto him against that day. At the end of his life, when he's sitting in prison, and from an outward standpoint it seems like he's failing, he knew he was not. He said, the time of my departure is at hand. I've fought a good fight. I've finished the course. I've kept the faith. Therefore, there's laid up for me in heaven a crown which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give to me at that day. Paul didn't see himself in prison. Paul didn't see himself as a failure. Paul said, I've done everything I could, and now I'm in prison. I'm going to be executed by Nero, and when I do, I'm going to heaven, and I want you to go with me. Faith can't be defeated by circumstances, but you have to have that kind of faith. Prayer strengthens. We see that in Nehemiah. Over and over again, we read about him saying, well, I prayed. Chapter 1 and verse 4, when he heard how bad the situation was, he cried and mourned, but he prayed. When the king said, well, what do you want me to do for you? He first prayed to God. In chapter 4 and verse 4, when the enemies threatened him, he prayed to God, and then he told them, well, God's going to help us build this wall, so I'm not worried about what you have to say. In chapter 4 and verse 9, even though they're threatened with warfare, they say, we made our prayer to God, and because of them, we set a watch day and night. That's what faith does. It prays to God for help, and then it does what it can. And so prayer was a big part of it. And it's not like they're sitting around just praying and doing nothing else. They're praying while they're working. They're praying while they're watching for the enemy. They're praying day and night while they're building the walls, as exhausted and tiring as that might be. And so it's not surprising the first church in Jerusalem in Acts 2 and verse 42 continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine, the breaking of bread, and guess what? Prayers. You know who prays? People who are convicted. Our God will fight for us. Our God will help us build this wall. And we translate that by saying, this is a church that belongs to Jesus Christ. It's His, not ours. We're going to build this church because we have a mind to work. And all the enemies can say what they want to, but we're going to grow in spite of them, not because of them. And the enemies tried everything they could. They tried to mock. They tried warfare. They tried flattery. And they tried to misrepresent. And let's just take the time to look at that real quickly. In chapter 4 that we read the scripture reading, when they heard that they were going to build the walls, they were angry and indignant, and they began to mock the Jews and say, what are these feeble Jews doing? Will they fortify themselves? Will they offer sacrifice? Will they complete it in a day? Will they revive the stones from the heap of rubbish stones that are burned? And Tobiah said, well, if they build it, a fox would knock it over. And Nehemiah says, so we built the wall. And listen, sometimes we listen to the world too much. You Christians need to be less judgmental and more compromising. You need to try to get along. You need to be inclusive. No, we need to follow Jesus and build the wall, the spiritual wall of protection around us. Well, then that didn't work. So in chapter 4, verses 7 through 9 that we've already read, they said, well, we're going to come and attack you and kill you when you don't even know where we're coming from. So they prepared for that. In chapter 6, when the wall had already been finished and they just needed to put up a few gates, they said, well, let's try this tactic. So now Sambalat, Tobiah, Geshem, the Arab, and the rest of our enemies heard that we'd rebuilt the wall and that there were no breaks left in it, though at the time I had not hung the doors and the gates. But Sambalat and Geshem sent to me saying, come, let us meet together among the villages and the plains of Ono. Oh, we were wrong, Nehemiah. You built the walls. Let's all get together and talk about it. Let's think about this a while. You know, one of the things that will destroy a business is having too many meetings. Anybody agree with that? You know, you got to have meetings, an organization, but sometimes companies just have meetings to be having meetings, and boy, that just wears people out. I've had people come in on Wednesday night. I've been in a meeting all day. What'd you do? Not much. Well, that's what their tactic is. But he said, I sent messages to them saying, I am doing a great work so that I cannot come down. Why should the work cease while I leave and go down to you? You know, he said, we built the walls without your help, and we certainly don't need to be talking to you now. And it says, they sent this message four times, and I answered them in the same manner. That's not going to work. So you know what? Now Sambalat starts lying about it. So he sends this message and says, well, we're going to send this to the king, and here's what it's going to say. It is reported among the nations, and Geshem says that you and the Jews plan to rebel. Therefore, according to these rumors, you're rebuilding the wall that you may be their king. And you have also appointed prophets to proclaim concerning you Jerusalem, saying, there's a king in Judah. Now these matters will be reported to the king, so come therefore and let us consult together. Nehemiah, if you don't come talk to us, we're going to report you to the king and say, you're trying to be a king yourself. And Nehemiah didn't say, oh, now what am I going to do? He just wrote back and he said, no such things as you say are being done, but you invent them in your own heart. For they are all were trying to make us afraid, saying their hands will be weakened in the work and it will not be done. Now therefore, O God, strengthen my hands. A great quality of a leader is he doesn't listen to the complaints, the whines, the gripes of the enemy. He doesn't let that affect his conviction because God's word is where he gets his faith and his convictions. So faith plus works is a living faith, right? And so we ask ourselves, what am I doing to build the church up here? What am I doing to help? And that's the question we need to ask ourselves today. We have lots to do. If you remember when we began this year, my suggestion for a theme for this congregation was to say simply this: we can do better. And so each of us, as individuals, will decide that we're going to do better or we're not. And that's something I can't do for you. The best preacher in the world can't make you decide to serve the Lord and do better. The best preacher in the world, the best elders in the world can't make you decide you're going to help. That's something you have to do. But may God bless us with future leaders who have the qualities of Nehemiah, and may God bless us as followers with the desire to rise up and build. If we do, everything will be fine. If not, don't say I didn't warn you. If you're not a child of God this morning, I hope you'll start building your life by obeying the gospel and faith, repentance, confession, and baptism. There's not a better life you can live than a life that is dedicated to God. And if you'll do that first, then He'll bless you in all the other things you need in life. I don't say that as a preacher who doesn't know. I preached the gospel for 45 years, and I've been a Christian for about 50. And God has always blessed me and Emily and our family when we did the right thing. So with that kind of example, I think you might want to consider that. If you want to have a good life, live it like Christ wants you to, and it will turn out like it should. So if you need to obey the gospel, we encourage you to come this morning while we stand, while we sing.